Hello, my name is Bat Burns, and I was born in the village of Sneem, and that's where this programme is coming from. I haven't spent all my life in Sneem. I've been in America for not a huge period of time, but I've been there. Right now I'm in this beautiful village of Sneem. I'm glad to get an opportunity to talk to you.
Bat, you've grown up in Sneem. What's it been like over the last couple of years?
Well, it has changed dramatically. This village was anything but attractive when I was growing up. I was born in the village up in the North Square. I come from a family of nine. I'm the eldest of nine. And certainly around the time that I was born, there was no colour, there was no painting of houses, there was litter everywhere. The two village greens, which are such a feature of the village now, they were existent, but they were two rubbish dumps almost. And can you imagine a fair day in the village when you had cattle and sheep standing? There was no team to brush up everything afterwards. It was anything but attractive, and the place was riddled with immigration. There was no work here. There's no factory here. Things have changed quite a bit now. There was very little tourist development. And again, that has changed dramatically. I suppose the biggest change was the look of the village, from being a drab, dreary village today, or by the way, in 1987, it won the National Tidy Towns Award for the best kept village in Ireland.
Wow.
So it's a changed place today. You have colourful, the houses are beautifully painted, you have shops, and you have B&B, and we have a hotel, which of course is a great boon to the village. That was something that I personally was trying to coax people for years to start a hotel, but eventually a man was strong, he was born locally, opened the hotel, and that's a very important part of life in the village. So things have dramatically changed.
Mm-hmm. Now, growing up here, you said it was very dull and dreary. So how did you entertain yourself when you were young?
Well, I had an unusual experience when I was young. My mother was born 4 miles out of the village, out on the road to Killarney, the letter Finnish area, or Boulan and Av. And at a very young age, I went to live with my grandparents. It was quite common back then, if you came from a large family, to go off to live with grandparents. And I got a lucky break there because my grandfather was a bit of a Shanachie. His name was Mikey or Michael Clifford. He was born in 1875 and died in 1962. So I went to live in that house where everything was old style, needless to mention. There was no electricity. There wasn't even radio or TV, but that's where I came face to face with the storytelling tradition. He wasn't a famous Shanachie, but he was a great storyteller in my eyes, and literally I had the experience of sitting by the open fire on winter nights. He seated in an old armchair across from me and he's spinning yarns. So that was a very special experience. Now, getting back to the Sneem, I went out there about the age of 3 or 4, and I was there until such time as I left for secondary school at about 12, and I was one of the lucky ones in the village to get a secondary education. There was no secondary school in the village, it's too tiny for that. And there was no bus service if they wanted to go to Kenmare. So I was lucky to get, my parents could afford to send me to boarding school. So I left the village when I was about 12 and then returned for holiday times.
And what were those holiday times like when you got to come back?
Well, there was football. I was quite interested in football. There was a pretty lively, active football club here, and that was part of life. There was a hall opened, a dance hall opened, long before then, but it was done up very much in the around that time that I was coming up to 16 and 17. So there were dances held. They were some of the main ones. In the summertime, of course, we were close to beaches. Mm-hmm. When you go west from here, you get what we call the White Strand and the Castle Cove area and Durnan. So there was swimming. We used to swim in the estuary of the river here. So good enough memories of my young life here.
Mm-hmm. They were simple times, weren't they?
Very simple. Very. When I compare them to now, it's almost, when I talk about it to people outside of here, it is almost as if I'm making it up, that I'm making a story about it. But they were very different times. What a pleasure it is to be living here at the present time. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think as well, like a lot of people, you realise what you appreciate when you grow up then and realise what you had before and what we have now.
Oh, very definitely, yeah. I mean, all the things that we now take for granted, electricity and the world of IT, of course, has mm-hmm. changed dramatically. I'm still cagey enough about that world. Well, not cagey, but I could do with a couple of courses on IT and iPads and iPhones. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's very different now. I spent about probably 10 or 12 years in total in America, but it was never on the track for me that I was going to end up my life there. It was always to come back here. So I came back at a good time. There was a great vibrancy about the place this summer. It was very colourful. Still, if you walk up through the village there, and there are some very lovely walks in the surrounds of the village. Mm-hmm. We have a digital hub here, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's being done in the village at the moment is to attract people to use that digital hub. Two lots of people will be interested in. That means if a man comes with his family on holidays, and if the husband maybe has to cut short the holiday, he can go to the digital hub and work there from 9 to 5. Mm-hmm. And there's still a long day there in the summertime back to the family. Mm-hmm. But another major project is to attract people to come and live permanently. Mm-hmm. And a big publicity campaign has been going on for the past couple of years to attract people. And let me give you one example of how successful that was in one case. Right now there's a South African family here, father and mother, and two school-going kids. And they want to make their life here. There are a couple of more people that are showing interest in that. So that would be a terrific development. Mm-hmm. So the place is changing dramatically and all for the better.
It is definitely. And again, it's a place that shouldn't be forgotten, because it is, well, as I was passing through here this morning, there is such colour about the place. And I noticed as well as I was driving, nearly everyone salutes you, even though you don't know them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're very friendly to tourists. I think that's very important, that there's a welcome for them in our restaurants or little shops or bars or whatever. Very important part of it.
Mm-hmm. But to bring you back as well, you say you went to America. What brought you to America?
Well, that's a story in itself. I began teaching here in 1961. And after 33 years in the classroom, I had great years in the classroom, very enjoyable, especially the early years. If you go back to 1971, I think that's the year of it, the whole curriculum in primary school was changed from an old style curriculum to a new subject center. It was all subject center before, but then they introduced that pupils would be led to find out about their immediate locality before they started to learn the geography and history of other places, that you get to know your own area. And I got involved in that, and the school here was taken as a pilot school, and they were exciting years. It meant a big change, especially for older teachers, but our teachers here adapted to it very quickly, and it was, I think, I give one example. I knew the height of the mountain that you can see out my front window here before I knew, or I didn't know the height of that. So the whole thing on that new curriculum was exciting.
Mm-hmm.
That got me into writing geography books, and that took up a lot of my time, and it was successful financially as well. Indeed, I had kids going to away in secondary school and college. So that was an exciting time. But I had lots of relatives in America and had been to America when I was much younger, before I got married. And I was in a friend's house in America one time in the 19... Now I'm very bad on dates. The 90s, yeah, the mid-90s, mid to late 90s. And on... I was in his sitting room one Sunday evening, and there was a paper there advertising work permits for America. And for devilment more than anything else, I signed it up, and will you believe it, 6 months later, a letter came to the school here saying you have been selected for a green card. So I was left then with a decision to make. What are you going to do with the green card? Are you really going to pull up roots and go to America? And my wife and I, who have since passed, we burdened the midnight oil here trying to make a decision on it. Well, eventually we decided to pull up roots here and go to America. Now, I asked for a leave of absence for a year, got it, went out to America. That was pretty successful. I was doing a lot of storytelling and poetry and history sessions and all that sort of stuff at the time, and that went down well in America. It went down so well that I looked for a second year. And by the time the end of the second year came, it was either you come or go at that stage. So I opted to come back, but I was back and forth, and I got very involved in hosting tours of Ireland, hosting groups of American for tours of Ireland. I was doing that for about 25 years,
wow,
almost full time. So I'm now retired from all of that.
A well-earned break.
And yeah, I'm back where I always wanted to be, but enjoyed the time that I was away. And that's my story so far.
While you were in America, you wrote this book, The King with Horse's Ears. Tell us a bit about that and how it came about.
I got a request from a publishing company in the States to know if I'd write a part of a series. That they wanted somebody from each of about five or six different countries to write a book, and somebody put my name in. I had been to the National Storytelling Festival in Jonesboro, Tennessee. That was again in when I went out first, 1995, and I did well there. I was a different voice there, and they liked the stuff that I told. I remember one story that you mightn't expect would go down very well was a literary short story by Frank O'Connor called My First Confession.
Mm-hmm.
It is a hilarious story, but that went down very well, as well as these other ones, The King with Horse's Ears, Stories of the Fianna, and all that. So I began writing while I was in America. At that time, we were spending so much time there that I bought a house in South Carolina and worked there for day and night for probably 6 months, and eventually came up with this book, The King with Horse's Ears, which won a national award there, the best collection of folk tales for young people, again back I can't give you the year. It was 2000 maybe or sometime.
That must have been an absolute honour when you got that award.
It was, yeah. It wasn't any big deal. It was just announced somewhere. There was no big presentation or anything like that, but I was very proud of it to have got it. And obviously when I was doing any shows there, I would have this book for sale. They eventually got sold out completely, and all I have now is a few copies that I want for my own family. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was an exciting time.
Bat, how important is storytelling to bring to today's world and society?
Well, number one, it's one of our oldest traditions in this country. And one of the motivations I had when I was responsible for organizing a few people to start the storytelling festival was that in this area, and I had first-hand experiences, my grandfather wasn't a famous storyteller, none of his work ever was heard on radio or television, but to me he was great, and he had that story, The King with Horse's Ears, stories of the Fianna, stories about Daniel O'Connell, and I felt that we are losing all those in the world of IT with iPads and iPhones, that all of these are being pushed aside, or well, not being deliberately pushed aside, but forgotten about. So it's important that we revive old traditions. There's a big move now to revive old traditions, find out about old buildings and all that, the world of the past. And of course, for kids, storytelling is always a take. If you could do all storytelling in school, there'd be no problems with discipline at all. But I think it's very important. I neglected storytelling in my early years teaching. There was so much else going on. But I can remember at one time I took it up and set it before me that each kid leaving primary school, they left at the end of sixth class, that they would carry a story with them from the Irish tradition. So we dug up a series of stories, and I did a little bit of preparation with them, speaking and expression and all that sort of stuff. And even the weak ones, I got simple stories that they would learn off, which is not the ideal way of passing on stories. Mm-hmm. That goes against the tradition in a way. But I saw a transformation in the kids, those that were able to tell a story. It is a tremendous boost to a kid's confidence to be able to get up and do that. Mm-hmm. And in our storytelling festival, right from the word go, I would rate one of the most important items on the agenda is the young tellers. So each year we attract young tellers. These, we haven't put an age thing on it, but they would be under 18 anyway. And that has proved very successful. And we're just recruiting or finding out who's willing to come this coming year. Mm-hmm. November isn't too far away now. It's the 11th, 12th and 13th is the festival. Mm-hmm. And that Young Tellers is on Saturday the 12th. So if anybody knows any young tellers, get in contact with our festival secretary. We'd love to have them here. Mm-hmm. I think we have probably about 7 or 8 at this stage. Mm-hmm. And that's a very important part of storytelling.
And I think as well, for anyone that mightn't be as confident doing it, it'd be a great start for them to get to know other storytellers as well in a festival like this, to get the confidence for it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it is a great experience for any aspiring young tellers here in the village that wouldn't have the courage yet, maybe. Mm-hmm. They'd be timid about getting up in front of people. Seeing these other ones that are coming, a number of them are prize winners in At the Flat Keol, we have one prize winner, a young lad that's coming, and we have other prize winners from other years. So if some of our young people see these people performing on stage, they say, well, why can't I do it? Now, the big question is, of course, we'd love to do it, but can you give us the story?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big thing at the moment. What type of story goes down in this new world that we're living in?
It's very true. It's very, very true, isn't it?
Very true. And that's a challenge. Now, I'm pretty well past the writing stage of new stories at this stage, but I do would promote it in every way possible. And if I come across a good story, I would, if we could get... I'd love to see schools taking on storytelling, but if I say that to a teacher today, they'd say, what are you talking about? We have so much to cope with now at the moment.
We don't have the time.
Don't have the time. And talking about school and kids, we have a big influx of Ukrainians to the school. That's a challenge for the school, of course, because they don't have any English.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great for the community. They have been very welcome here. And maybe at some stage there'll be a Ukrainian telling a story in next year's storytelling festival.
Exactly, fingers crossed. So let's talk about this year's SNEEM Storytelling Festival. What can we expect and when does it start?
The story, by the way, there is a program for schools run by Poetry Ireland, where you can hire a storyteller for the school. And we have that happening. We have one of the best storytellers in Ireland at the moment, a lady called Nuala Hayes, who she does mostly adult storytelling, but she does schools as well. And we have secured her to come to the school on Thursday the 10th. And we appreciate the cooperation of the school. One of the teachers in the school took it on to make the context and all that. So that's...
That would be brilliant for the children.
That's for the children, yeah. Now, that's on the 10th, the 10th of November.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not open to the public, of course, it's just for the school.
Mm-hmm.
The 11th of November... We have a full session. Our secretary lives in a house about 3 miles out of the village. She's restored an old building there herself and her husband, Rosie Crouch. And they call it Yarns in the Barn. And that's starting off at 1 p.m. on the Friday the 11th. Then we have sessions by Nuala Hayes, who's the storyteller that's coming to the school, and she's going to stay on and do some adult stuff. We have, I suppose, one of the stars at the moment, Bernard Casey.
Mm-hmm.
I think, hopefully, he has blended the old with the new, and I think he has.
I think he's doing a very good job of that as well.
Okay, glad to hear that. I listened to him myself. I think he's very, very witty, extremely witty, writes his own material, and we are certainly very much looking forward to him. He is here on for the storytelling concert at 8 o'clock on Friday the 11th.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have a lecturer in UCC, called Kieran O'Galvan. He's from the Gaeltacht, the Ring Gaeltacht, I think, as far as I know. And he's doing a talk on folklore in the November time, Samhain. And he's also a bit of a Shannó singer and musician, I believe. So he's going to do a song on Shannós for us and a couple of good other songs as well. Now, that concert is on 8 p.m. on Friday the 11th of November. So you have Nuala Hayes, a storyteller, Kieran O'Galvan, a lecturer, Bernard Casey. And we have an interesting one. There's a retired vet from Carseveen called Frank O'Leary. I asked him, I said, "You're well retired. Go back over the times you had and pick out any story, good story from your days with farmers out when you were doing the vet."
I said that would be a gas one.
Awfully. And there's a Paddy O'Brien with Kerry Connections.
Mm-hmm.
He's living in Cork at the moment. So that's a big line-up of a concert at 8 o'clock on the 11th. Now, a very interesting talk is on Saturday the 12th. I don't know if you ever heard of Bishop Graves or Alfred Percival Graves, but Alfred Percival Graves was the son of a Bishop Graves, the Protestant bishop of Limerick. And his son wrote a song called Father O'Flynn. It was a song that was very popular when I was young. The chorus of it, I'm not a singer, but the chorus of it was, "Here's a health to you, Father O'Flynn. Slainte and slainte and slainte again, powerfulest teacher and tenderest preacher and kindliest creature in old Donegal." Now, we're not in Donegal, or that wasn't meant for it, but there's a story why Donegal was put in there. Was it just for rhyming purposes, or was there another reason?
Mm.
But in 1965, a young student, he was about 19 or 20 maybe, called Richard Graves, came to Sneem to find out about the Graves connection at Sneem. Now, Bishop Graves rented a building in Partnercella. Just the hotel wasn't there at the time, of course. This is going way back. He rented a building there for years and years. And Alfred Percival Graves came to holiday there, because he was his father. But this Richard Graves, who lives in England, heard about the connection with Partnercella and Sneem, and he came to look it up. Now, he says that he met me in Sneem, and that he stayed in a B&B that I was running at the time. I have no clear memory of that. It's 1965, is a long time ago. But out of the blue, I got a letter from him saying that he wants to come back and meet and just discover more about the Graves connection. Since then, he became a famous biographer. I think he's a nephew of Robert Graves, the famous English poet as well. So we're very much looking forward to his lecture at 10 o'clock on Saturday the 12th.
That will be exciting.
Yeah, it should be exciting. I think that's a bit of a scoop. He's willing to come and talk about the Graves connection.
Mm-hmm.
The other big thing during the festival is what we call a story swap. There are people that might be too shy ever to go on stage, but in the pub, we encourage them to come and tell the story. Maybe there might only be 10 people in the pub, or 5 or 6 people. It's called Story Swap, and that's becoming quite popular.
Mm-hmm.
The lecture then, one of the main lectures is Samhain and St. Martin's Day in Irish Folklore. That's by Ciarán O'Gelvaughan. There's some of the main events. The Young Tellers, of course, that's on at 5 p.m. And that Nuala Hayes will be doing other bits and pieces. I might throw in a story myself if I can remember them. At this stage, we were forgetting most of the stuff.
And I see as well you have there at the bottom, Storytelling Pub Trail. That'll be fun, I'd say.
That's very good, yeah. Now, the other big name on at 8 o'clock on Saturday night the 12th is John Kenny. If you ever heard of The Unbelievables, Pat Short and John Kenny were a famous duo about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Since they went off on their own. But John Kenny is coming, and He has called his show Stories and Tales from the Unexpected. He's a great performer. He's very entertaining. He was here before with a matchmaker, and he brought the house down, so we're delighted with him.
Brilliant.
So that's the main program on Sunday. It's just to tie up. There's a session for anybody and everybody, a sort of a going away session on Sunday afternoon. We have the local drama group are doing something on Sunday as well, a Chekhov play. So I'm sure I have left out stuff, but...
But if anyone wants to see anything, I'm sure if they look up online for the Sneem Storytelling Festival as well, they can see what is on, out and about. And we'll give the number as well
give
for anyone.
Give that number as well, yeah. That's, anyway, it's a very important event in the economy of Sneem as well.
Mm-hmm.
It gives business to the pubs, and the hotel is usually full.
Mm-hmm.
Which means more people around all the time. And now with the... Did I mention the digital hub to you?
You did, yeah.
I mean, if people want to come down maybe for an extra day, the hub is there, it will be open.
Mm-hmm.
It had a very busy summer season, averaging about 18 people a day.
Brilliant.
And that would be a way down in November now, probably down to 6 or 7, but it's... It's a big plus for the village.
Bat, thank you so much for your time today. Hopefully we'll be bringing Travels Through Kingdom down to the Sneem Storytelling Festival as well, and we'll have another chat then.
Good, fantastic, yeah. Thanks for coming.